If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the third and final hour of this live broadcast. Appreciate you coming along for the ride wherever you are. We appreciate your listenership. Thank you so much. And to that special big thank you to Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria and Bahrain, for weighing in on Ukraine, the economy, and what's happening in Europe. And the situation is dire. I mean, not just in the UK, but more so on the continent. What's going on economically in terms of energy prices, food, fuel, inflation, just in general. Two biggest economies in the EU whose driving trends is really going to be two countries you need to look at. One is Germany and the other is France. They're also UN Security Council members and some of the leading members of NATO, at least in the second tier of NATO, behind the US and the UK. Where France goes, Europe goes in many ways. And right now there's some crazy things happening in France. I hear stories of petroleum rationing. What's next? Petrol riots? Who knows? Shortages. We've got Freddy Ponton on the line, independent journalist from France, researcher extraordinaire. He's joining us on the live link right now. Hello, Freddy. How are you?
Hi, Patrick. Good to be here. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. It doesn't look like you guys are doing too well there in the heart of Europe. What on earth is going on? It feels like something's going to explode on the streets of France. So what is going on right now?
Yes, Patrick, indeed, absolutely. Well, obviously, gas shortage, energy crisis, and war in Ukraine, tensions are on all fronts, and obviously France is in the midst of that. So we have temporary gas line shortages and projected drop in production globally, creating fear of a price increase. And then, of course, as we all know, the leaks of the two Nord Stream 1 and 2 gas pipeline and fear of a nuclear disaster in Ukraine is completing this doomsday kind of a week. And then, of course, the Russian army, subsequently the Russian government taking control of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is not helping. So what we are seeing at the moment, Patrick, here is the tensions are indeed erupting on all energy fronts in Europe. And the question is, and it's always been, is this all part of the globalist control demolition plan and the control of the very social and economic fabric of Europe? So this crisis is very interesting since it's started in September, actually, in September 28th in France, with Total Energies Group announcing that it would pay dividends of more than 2.62 billion euros to its shareholders and for petrochemical workers. Obviously, in France, it was perhaps one announcement too many, I would say, and it certainly didn't go down well with them. So they are striking, they've been striking for days now. And the result is felt at the pump, because you obviously the petrol is not arriving at the pump, and that creates quite a bit of a turmoil in the country, Patrick.
And how about the prices? What are we talking about per liter right now on the high end in France? Euros per liter? What's the price?
Well, you know, obviously, for those that manage to get the E10, what we call the E10, which is the most popular one, you'll get from 1.7, but as soon as you go to the motorway, you know, you can go to any prices. There's no cap, you know, so you can find it around 2. I mean, I was on the road not so long ago. I almost paid 2.1, you know, on the motorway. So 2.1 euro per liter is quite, you know,
you're paying stiff, more. You're paying more than in California.
Yes, we are.
So this is just robbery. It's robbery, isn't it? I mean, what's the ceiling on this, Freddie? Do you think it can go to 2.50 euros per liter or 3 euros per liter? Where is the ceiling on this?
I think there is no ceiling, to be honest with you. It's whatever they can get away with it, you know, unless people really understand the root of this crisis, you know, and understand that this is all orchestrated, and to a point where the French people have to literally come out and say enough is enough, you know. So on this particular occasion, this is really about basically salaries. You know, people are saying, look, you know, we're not making enough money. And this has been going on for over 40 years, you know. So, and I will explain to you and I will explain to the audience the reason behind that, because there's actually a reason behind this salary problem that is affecting the livelihood of the French workers. You know, it's not just the refineries operators. You know, it's across the board. People are not making enough money to make ends meet. And that's obviously, like in any other countries, you're going to get basically people on the street saying, we can't eat, we cannot feed our families, we cannot put now petrol in our cars to go to work. I mean, what's next? The next is people going to be on the street, and we're talking about revolution level, and it's brewing in the basements and the undergrounds of France. The rumors is pretty high and starting to make some noise. So people are very unhappy. And then, as I said earlier in my earlier statement, it's really the amount of crisis. We're going from one crisis to the next. Every week something is about to explode. If it's not the price, it's about a nuclear plant. If it's not a nuclear plant, it's pipelines in the Danish Straits, and on and on and on. And I think that this going from one crisis to the next is starting to take its toll on the population, Patrick.
Is that the big difference between now and when the Gilets Jaunes or Yellow Vest protests kicked off? I think, what was that, to 2018 or something like that, late 2018? What's the difference now? I mean, that was a big protest movement that went on for a long time. If something pops now, Freddie, in France, what do you think it's going to look like? How is it going to be different than the Yellow Vests?
Yes, so you see, I like to look at history. I think we can learn something from history, and especially looking at the Gilets Jaunes. But the Gilets Jaunes is just another movement born out of a crisis that really goes down to the livelihood. When the livelihood is affected by bad or poor political decisions, or by the fact that France has lost its sovereignty on so many platforms, then people come onto the street. And if you look, for example, for this petrol crisis in France at the moment, this is not the first time in history this has occurred. 1968 was the biggest one, of course, where there was absolutely no petrol whatsoever to be found in France. You know, so it was probably the biggest we've ever had on record during May 1968, during this famous uprising and cultural revolution in France. But 1996, 2000, 2010, 2016, 2019, and then 2022. So this is obviously a pattern, and it keeps on happening. And the reason why it's happening, it's simply a phenomenon that is linked back to the abolishment in 1983 of the indexations of the wages on the inflation. Let me explain. What happened is that the socialist governments in 1983, they were led by a French prime minister, Pierre Mauroy. And what they did is basically they created the de-indexations of wages on inflation. And as a direct result, for 40 years now, the purchasing powers of wages has gradually eroded. And over the years, it has become harder and harder for the working force of France to make ends meet. So it's a real political decisions. You and I wrote an article about Project 1980s, which is really go back to this 1980s era where the disintegrations of the economic and social fabrics of Europe was starting, you know. And we can really see exactly the same thing over and over. You know, Paul Volcker did it with the Fed and so on. They are basically bringing poverty, you know, into our society. And they've done it slowly, gradually. And now we're starting to really the full effect, and they're obviously running out of options, you know. And that's exactly what we are currently witnessing, Patrick.
And so, well, I want to talk about the conflict in Ukraine and sort of the bigger geopolitical picture in a minute. But yeah, before we go to break, we're going to break with the station in just a minute. I just want to give a big shout out to people to go to 21stCenturyWire.com and look at the Biden feature at the top of the feature section there, just to give you a little hint of how bad things are going for the White House at the moment. They're threatening sanctions against Saudi Arabia for not raising oil production. I can't believe I'm reading this stuff. Freddie, it's just, they've just gone bonkers, right? Look, we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this on the other side. Patrick Kenningson, your host. You're listening to TNT, Today's News Talk. We've got Freddie Ponton, independent journalist from France, with us breaking down the situation in Europe. Now we're going to go international after these messages with TNT. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Shannon Joy.
There are so many battles raging today, right? We have the corporate venture capitalists who are looking to take over all major industries and corporate entities. They have massive control over education, academia, Hollywood, media. We have the conflict between Russia and Ukraine and everything that is surrounding that conflict. We have the threats of nuclear war, World War III. We have battles raging in school boards, in local communities across the United States of America. We have thousands upon thousands of Dutch farmers and protesters just pouring into the streets across Europe. We have revolt in Canada. It's every area in our world today. There's tension and there's conflict. And it does seem as if we are just engaging in this massive battle. Most people, frankly, are shell-shocked.
Shannon Joy on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, everybody. We're well into the broadcast today, third hour of this show, and we're broadcasting globally. Thank you for joining us. We've got Freddie Ponton, independent French journalist, joining us on the line right now, breaking down the situation in Europe. Freddie, now,
can you hear me?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear.
Fantastic. Freddie. Sorry, I might have paused on my side for some reason. Yes, Patrick, here we we obviously are looking with quite a bit of astonishment about the latest developments in Saudi Arabia and the late trip of Joe Biden in Riyadh. And it's really sad. It's laughable, but it's sad as well to see really how this relationship is deteriorating and how clearly a president has to go Riyadh to try and to
Yeah, I think we got
to. Okay, can you hear me?
We got a little connection issue, but we're going to reconnect Freddie in a second, so just bear with us. But yeah, we're talking about the U.S. and the latest news with Saudi Arabia attempt to sanction Saudi Arabia for what? For not cooperating on oil production. So I guess Washington thinks that they can just say, hey, we need you to produce more. This is like putting pressure on OPEC. I guess maybe it worked in the past. It's not working now. Now the reaction from from the kingdom is basically, as I said in the top of the hour news headline, they're telling the White House to go pound sand, no pun intended, Freddie. So it's like they're not getting what they want, and now they're lashing out against their biggest ally. I mean, if you're the U.S., you cannot have Saudi Arabia as an adversary. If you want to do anything and stay in the Middle East and be involved in anything, it's not a good policy. So I don't see where they're going on this, Freddie. Nothing positive can come from this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a French person, I'm probably allowed to say it, but it's a real shit show. You know, it's really unbelievable. But, you know, when you see, you know, it's just, excuse my French here, but really Democrats, senators.
Excuse your English. Excuse your English.
Oh, excuse my English now. Yeah. yes. You see what William amazes me straight away. You know, it's like a spoiled child, you know, this Biden administrations, and they can't get really their way with Saudi Arabia and other, obviously, OPEC members. And then straight away, you have, obviously, the bad cops are coming, the Democrat senators that call for a freeze on arms sales to Saudi Arabia and oil production cuts. And then it's just like, I don't know what these guys are up to, but clearly, you know, it's like really that there's no plan. That's the overall feeling that I'm getting from this administration, is that everything is done on the spur of the moment, if you will. It just keeps on, it's reacting. And if they are displeased with the adversary or the challengers, they come up with some really quirky solutions. But I think on this one, they get exposed. And someone said actually something very true, but such a maneuver, if it was proven to be right, let's say the Saudis have recorded this conversation, I'm, you know, showing Biden basically asking them to buy time before pushing this problem, you know, pushing the can, you know, after the midterm, or at least within a month and a half time. That's unimpeachable. It is actually unimpeachable. You can impeach someone for that, because this is just absolutely using the U.S. Government policies to kind of push forward your kind of an election bonuses, if you will. You know, you're trying to get an advantage with your competition using the current foreign policies and moves that's going to affect an elections without giving the opportunities of the Republicans to actually have a say into that. That's really, you know, borderline as far as I'm concerned, you know. So I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but clearly this is something that's really doesn't look good. It stinks as hell. And that should never happen. But I guess they have too much on their plate, Patrick. You know, I think this all Ukraine, Russia, NATO subterfuge is starting to really now to kind of backlash. And I think we are going to see quite a few surprises over the next few days. Clearly today, probably for me, the top of the hour was to have Trump and Kissinger attending a meeting in Astana to meet Lavrov, you know.
Kazakhstan.
In Kazakhstan, you know. So what's going on here? What are they talking about? And what are the real plan? You know, what there's not basically the full story has not been told. Clearly, it's not been told. And I think what we can see is, I mean, what I can see personally is Anne Bridgie. I don't know if you guys know her, but she's the Vice President Europe and Central Asia for the World Bank, and she released with regards to the need for rapid damage and the needs for assessment report projects in Ukraine for reconstruction and recovery. And she even provided figures of $349 billion. So I will do what I always do. I follow the money. So I believe this is really what we are seeing at the moment. This is what Kissinger's has been part of this little mission to Astana, is to strike a deal as to who's going to get the money, basically, as far as getting a peace treaty and to get the reconstruction money. And I think it was always about that. The nuclear threat is just basically another and as a subterfuge to have the people swallowing the the blue pill and having them to believe that these people are ready to throw weapon of mass destruction at each other, you know. But I don't see that happening. Again, this is another distraction. And when you see the people involved in these moves, including the intelligence community, then you know that these are the master of deceptions. And I think that's exactly what we are saying. But behind that, there are big money. One side, it's very simple. It is the military complex, industrial complex of the United States making a hell of a lot of money on this deal. And they want to keep on prolonging it as much as they can, because the drug manufacturing companies with the COVID-19 were well taken care of. Now, it's obviously the second largest lobbying in the United States need to get his money, and they are getting this money as we speak. And then when enough and, you know, everybody's appetite has been fulfilled, then they will move to roundtable discussions and agreed on how much money it's going to cost for the reconstructions and recovery a package for Ukraine. So that's my analysis. I could be wrong, I stand corrected, but at the moment, this is what I'm reading, Patrick.
Well, that's interesting that you talk about reconstruction there. And there's a funny chess game going on here, Freddie, which I want to get your thoughts on. There's this kind of delusion. I noticed this at the EU level. Whenever the politicians get together, they're saying, well, we need to help reconstruct Ukraine. All the damage that has been done, and most of the damage has been in Donbass and eastern Ukraine. And these areas are firmly under Russian control now. They're never going back. The people won't go back. They don't want to go back to the Nazi crazy, insane regime in Kiev backed by NATO, and who are racist against ethnic Russians. They're just not going to happen. So what's going on here, Freddie? Because I know you know a little bit about this type of operation, because you have good knowledge of reconstruction funds from the World Bank and how things are funneled through. So let's say, how much money are we talking about that they're going to earmark? What's the reality that any of that's going to get spent? What's it going to get spent on? Whose pockets will that money eventually go into? How would you see this game playing out here with Ukraine?
Yeah, well, it's basically the same scenario. You know, if you want to compare the process, probably Iraq will be a great place to start with. You know, if you look at the reconstruction efforts of Iraq, you're going to have the United Nations, obviously, providing some form of kind of not regulations, but some kind of framework, if you will, because they have the tools, they are used to it, and behind that, the will of the administrations involved in the roundtable deal will push forward their contractors. So for with the neocon back in the days, you knew exactly, you know, who they were. You know, Bechtel, Washington Group, all these larger contractors, which actually barely do any work on the ground. What they do is they get the budget, and then they get to spend this budget with the local partners. And that's exactly what's happening. And then obviously all these organizations are filled with CIA operatives, you know, which gather intelligence and conduct their covert operations within the country. So that's what you do, you know. And then obviously you have a huge band of lawyers, you know, the patent bugs and the big firms, that law firm that comes as well, which all most of these top lawyers are all former CIA guys anyway, or technical advisor to the CIA. I've had the chance to during my career, now I'm almost retired, but I had the chance to sit down with many of these guys, so I know the game. And it's about big bucks, it's about big money, and what I can tell you is that they are teaching people on how to do business, because there is normal way to do business and there is their way to do business. And unless you understand these rules, then you're not in business. So you got to forget about everything you know when you work with these companies, because they rewrite history wherever they go. So if these guys are going to move to Ukraine, they're going to rewrite everything about how business is conducted in Ukraine. And they're very good at it. They're very convincing. And the top CEOs of the world they listen to these guys because they control the budget, they control the money. So that's what you should be expecting now. Some people are getting extremely wealthy, making a lot of money on the back of the suffering of the Ukrainian poor people that decided to believe Zelensky and go to war on his behalf. And then obviously the Donbass people have suffered already enough between 2014 and now. And they now just are just a simple or another province of Russia. So they will be protected, and that's going to be the end of it. That's the way I see it. Obviously, it's slightly more complicated than that, but we need to see who is going to be the actors of this deal, because a deal is going to be struck, and it's about to understand who's going to be in the middle of that.
So you're talking about Iraq is a good comparison, actually. So you got Halliburton, you got B.T. Balfour, you got Bechtel, you got KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root.
Yeah.
So these guys,
Washington Group, exactly.
So when these guys go in, you know, they get allocated a budget through their contacts, and the governments or prefer them as the, you know, contractors for these carving up Ukraine. Let's say, for example, they get $5 billion. What they cream a certain amount off the top, don't they? That's the for them. The rest gets, I guess, spent on stuff with local contractors. But what's their normal take on the creaming off the top? What's it like, 35%? So if it's a $5 billion contract, what do they take? A $1.5 billion immediately off the top? That's for their profits and operating costs or whatever. What do they take for their shareholders?
Yeah, definitely. It's something on those lines. I mean, I can't speculate now. Nobody has ever told me exactly how much they're creaming. I believe these conversations are taking place, you know, behind the curtains, and the guys like me don't get invited. But off the records, obviously, certain conversation I've had make me understand that, you know, when the money has been spent, when enough money has been made from these guys, they literally want to fold and go home, you know. And that was the case in Iraq. I remember very well some of these contractors just didn't want to be there at all. They'll say, look, this is screwed up, you know. We just want to go home. There's nothing in there for us. Because after a while, you need to understand that you're making money. If the place is peaceful, right, that's mean that there is no issues. The problem with Iraq is the bill started to really get really big when they had to pay, obviously, all these private security firms, you know, with Prince and all these guys, you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Hold on, we lost Freddie again. We'll try to get him back in just a minute. So hold on, we'll redial Freddie. But anyway, we're talking about the reconstruction of Ukraine and what that entails, what's involved with that. And obviously, there's a lot of money involved in that. We're talking billions and billions. That's money coming out of the public purse. Freddie's basically saying it's corporate welfare. So this is going straight from the state or wherever you're at into the hands of these corporations. So corporate welfare, yeah, that's pretty much what we're looking at. But we'll on to the NATO side. We got Freddie back, I think, on the line. Freddie, on the NATO side, we're seeing some drills happening. Now, what's your read on this? What's France's involvement in it? Just generally, what do you think of the positioning of NATO assets right now? I'm talking about air assets and this sort of thing. We saw the last naval drill in the Baltic. Then we see the Nord Stream blow up a few months later. What can we expect here?
Well, it's an interesting development. Obviously, this exercise was the exercise was announced by NATO with regards to the Steadfast Noon project, which was already conducted last year in Turkey. It's an interesting one, obviously, and to look at this operation and what purpose does it actually serve? Is it just another exercise? Does it have a much more political, geopolitical means? Certainly, to a certain extent. But I think this is all part of the show, Patrick. You know, it's a show where people are making money, and you need to have this constant fear, you know, in the air. You know, that's how these people work. You know, they like to keep people, you know, on the edge of their seat and telling them, look, we're about to, you know, to destroy the world, you know, as we know it, you know, butter at the last minute, you know, deal will be struck and everybody will suddenly become happy because money is flowing, you know. So my views on that is that this is all part of a big show, but clearly, I think from a very practical or tactical point of view, Ukraine was a dead end from day one. You know, it was absolutely a dead end from day one. There is no way that there is enough NATO commitment into a real face-to-face engagement war with Russia. So when you don't see that, you know, and you don't see the troops that has been deployed on the ground, you need to see at least 75 up to 100,000 troops on the ground to be deployed to know that you got something coming. You know, when Russia came to the border before invading Ukraine, you could clearly see that they were going to war. You know, here I'm not saying this. All I'm saying is people are kind of tap dancing. It's just a show. You know, but it works. It works. A lot of people are in fear. People are worried about the loss and the doomsday, and you know. But none of that's gonna happen at all. I don't think so at all. What we're gonna see, as I say, it's a deal. It's about money. It's about control, and it's about money. And more importantly, right now, nobody wants to go back to the major debate that still needs to take place, which is the COVID-19 pandemic and the origin of SARS-CoV-2. So they drag it along as long as they can because they don't want to go back to this scenario, because this scenario is problem. And we're seeing more and more truth coming out on a daily basis, which starting obviously to worry the instigators of this pandemic. So I think that's they're buying time and they're playing the distraction game. That would be my analysis. But I don't see really any confrontation at this stage. It's just not there.
So you're saying it's more like, keep the public in fear in these different countries, do these big military exercises. What are they? They're selling and marketing hardware, aren't they? And kind of keeping that whole market afloat and get more spending, new military budgets come around each year, got to appropriate those and just keep. So they get basically keep this whole show going as long as possible because it's incredibly lucrative. Is it better to keep the show going or pull the plug and do the great reset? Like throw the chessboard over basically and revamp the entire European economy and political structures post-war. Is that a non-starter? What do you see here, Freddie?
Well, what I see is that it's an information war, you know, so they're losing the battle on the social network. Clearly, they're losing the battle on that sense. I don't think they were expecting that much, you know, pushback from citizen journalists all the way down to normal citizens, you know, looking into and getting to the bottom of this pandemic and this COVID-19. So I think that solution was part of the plan, is that Ukraine was always in the plan, you know, as an exit strategy and allowing it to create this energy crisis, you know, to push obviously the great research and the fourth industrial revolutions and the green agenda. So it all worked all together. You know, there's not five agenda. There's one agenda with many different ramifications, but it's all plugged in into the central command, which is Washington, D.C., the European Union, and the World Economic Forum. So when you see that, you understand what these guys are doing, and they're serving the same purpose. They'll sell you anything as long as it fits the agenda that's been proposed with the Great Reset. So it's a strategy, and they stick to their guns. And it doesn't matter. They might just abandon Ukraine if they see that the traction is not there anymore. The costs are too big. And more importantly, the big guys is not taking their 10%. Then they're going to pull away and come up with something else. If they need a new pandemic, it's just out there. They'll pull it. It doesn't matter. Whatever the cost, you know. So that's my analysis at the moment, is whatever the cost. They're going to keep on going because they are accelerating this agenda. I think I mentioned that to you previously in another show where this 2030 agenda seems quite far. And I think they're trying to accelerate it because they're losing control. And these people are all about control, Patrick.
I think you're right, Freddie. There's nothing that's accelerated that agenda, the 2030 agenda, Great Reset agenda. Nothing's accelerated so fast as this conflict in Ukraine. It's almost like it was made to order. It's almost like this was just the key that unlocked these things that they couldn't get people to necessarily get on board with voluntarily. Now they've kind of forced them into it under duress. That's what it seems like is happening right now. So like, why stop a good thing? If it's working for them, why would they stop it? So we could see Peter Ford was talking about a frozen conflict, a permanent state of conflict, i.e. North and South Korea, something like that with Ukraine. And what does that mean in terms of tension, you know, a couple of decades more of this and maybe some side skirmishes, but at the end of the day, it's created a new paradigm economically and with the European energy setup. And also it's put a lot of people under stress. Well, you know what happens, Freddie, when you can't pay the bills, either you go out in the street or you just basically try to work harder to look after your family. And you really don't have time. A lot of people don't have time to have the political enlightened conversation because they're just trying to make ends meet. So this is where it's at. So, but like, we're going to take a break real quick with TNT. I'm with Freddie Ponton, independent French journalist. We'll talk about this and more on the other side. Where is this crisis heading? Let's find out after these messages.
We can finally say it out loud. COVID vaccines may be reducing fertility. There, I said it.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The New York Times has reported that women's periods may be late after coronavirus vaccination, reporting erratic cycles after the shot. In addition, medical journals are reporting that COVID-19 vaccination impairs semen among semen donors. This is leading many in the medical community to worry about a drop in fertility. We've dealt with these fears before. A 1969 New York Times headline reads, "A sterility drug in food is hinted at." The New York Times reported the possibility that government might have to put sterility drugs in reservoirs and food to limit human multiplication was envisioned today by Paul Ehrlich. And you thought it was a conspiracy theory. This prompted Carl Rowan, the African-American columnist, to write "Blacks Fear Population Control as Genocide" in 1970. The question now is, what did they know about the COVID vaccine and when did they know it? This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
A cashless society means zero cash. 100% digital currency means your life is 100% dependent on a power surge and the internet. Every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
All right. Welcome back to the final segment of the final hour of this live broadcast. We're broadcasting globally here at TNT Today's News Talk, wherever you are in the world, morning drive time on the East Coast Central time zone, and of course the late shift down under in Australia, and the lunch timers taking a break, getting a little bit of politics and deep geopolitics in the UK and Europe. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. And from Europe, from the heart of Europe, we are talking to independent French journalist Freddie Ponton, who's also a features writer at 21stCenturyWire.com. Freddie has penned a number of amazing and thorough research studies talking about the issues that we're discussing now. And now, Freddie, now where are things headed right now? With, for instance, if I'll just give you a scenario, if things in the winter get really bad, I'm talking about people who are basically unable to pay their gas and electric bills. In the UK, there's this movement called "Don't Pay," and there's all these various different movements. They've just queued up and burned their power bills. publicly, and there was, I don't know, a couple hundred or a thousand people did that. It got a little media attention in Britain. So clearly people cannot afford it. Businesses can't afford it. Businesses shut down. What do people do, though? Businesses can go out of business, but what do people do? Do they get evicted from their home? Are they going to go and basically just ignore the power companies and ignore the demands and the debt collections that are coming through the post? This could be a European-wide issue, Freddie, because a lot of people are getting hit with the same problem. This is kind of unprecedented in history.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this could be the trigger that I've been waiting for, which is the shift from the middle class and those that have, some of them have voted Macron, some people have been supporting this green agenda and so on, but starting to realize, people only wake up when it starts to affect them. So for those that lives, just at poverty level, that just been surviving for the last past 10, 15 years in France, is business as usual, which is surviving. But what you really want, it's the middle class, even sometimes even a little bit upper middle class, starting to feel really the pain, because most of these middle class guys are business owners. We saw a very strong report in France announcing that 9,000 companies declared bankruptcy this year in 2022. So that's another 67-69% increase from last year. So this has to show at some stage. And I think the repercussions of these numbers will be seen in the behaviors of this middle class, upper middle class, that's going to start to see that they might have been played, realize that this is not working for them now because it's just becoming too expensive. The business need to shut down. The electricity bills are too expensive. So they might actually join the fight with those that have been living, in poverty and abject conditions for the last past 10, 15 years in France. So when that shift happened, this is when you're going to see a tremendous movement in France. And I think that's what's brewing in the underground of France, is people are starting to bring, those that have not joined the efforts, those that have not pushed back yet, and are telling them, look, we cannot carry on like this. We've lost the sovereignty. We lost our currency. We lost the control of our borders. We lost the control of our foreign policies with NATO. We are completely vassal of Europe and the United States. We are on the verge of being thrown into what is described as a nuclear war, the Third World War. So at some stage, I think this middle class is starting really now to think twice and thinking that after all, maybe they better join, when there's still a time to push back and fight back. So that's what I'm hoping this winter be about. Everybody's coming together because everybody's understanding the danger, the existential danger under which we are living at the moment, and then push back once and for all and get rid of all these buffoons that have been running us for such a long time, probably for way too long time.
And what about one of the other core G7 countries is Italy? Okay, and can this also happen in Italy? Because I know there is a little bit of a relationship between, how things are going on the streets in France and also in Italy as well. They've got new leadership in. What do you think about What do you think about the new leader in Italy, new Prime Minister Meloni? And what do you think about the possibility for things reaching ahead in Italy? Because the Italians have also taken a beating, haven't they, in the last 3 years? Where is their stress level end on this? Where is their potential breaking point on this?
Well, I think Italians are very pragmatic in a certain way, especially when it goes down to politics. So they're going to be looking at signs from Meloni as far as to which direction she's going to be taking the people of Italy. She can compare with Macron. Macron has beautiful words, and has managed to basically put asleep half of the population. So words is one thing, but I think we've passed that now. And I think Italy needs to see really
direct action, something that is, you know, they can say we can trust her. So it's really about trust, you know, because obviously she had a bit of a quite challengeable past, you know, as a youth leader in the social movements of Italy. So she's been described as a fascist and so on. But all that is media play. At the end of the day, you know, people can change, you know, when they mature. But having said that, we need to see a real positioning and real actions, you know, that's going to prove to those that have put her in place that she's going to be with the people. She's going to be a true populist leader, and she's going to bring them, and she's going to bring stability to this country again by challenging the European Union, challenging NATO, and so on. Unfortunately, if you ask my own opinion, I will tell you that a message to Zelensky and saying that she's going to be supporting Ukraine and so on makes me wonder, well, what kind of person she really is, or is she another one of those gullible ones that thinks that, you know, Zelensky is the right guy, is the good guy, and we should be throwing weapons and money at him, you know. That's my concern, you know, and I unfortunately believe that I would be proven probably right, and not in a very long time. In the months to come, in the year to come, we will see the true face of Meloni. But I hope I'm wrong for the Italian, because I would like them to get out of this crisis like we do.
And what about the chances for a banking crisis in France? Are there any institutions that are in deep trouble? There's a number of them, of course, in Britain, and also in the U.S. that are, you know, teetering constantly on the edge of bankruptcy, because could Brussels afford a bailout? I mean, would that be too much? Would that break the system? Is there any danger of that side of things? Because I have seen some of these French institutions are pretty much underwater, over leveraged, and some of them are, you know, like the ones that are propping up EDF, for instance, or some of these other institutions. Potentially that could break, and then what happens? Is that full economic collapse type situation? What do you think?
Well, at the moment, the buying time, you know, it's a structural issue. You know, it's about this digital currency, you know, so the banking has already institutions and the technocrats and the globalists and the elite has already agreed to kind of control, demolish the current banking systems as we know it, and to bring about this new currency, this new digital currency. So if we follow the plan, clearly it doesn't make any sense for them to bail out, per se, the banks. I think they'll do it in a very short term just to buy more time until they're ready to pull the plug. So what we are saying now is just basically kind of repairing the leaks and trying to maintain the system alive, because it's really been maintained. It's on oxygen right now, and today the oxygen supplies dries out. You know, I think that, you know, they better be ready, because if they're not, we're going to see, you know, a mega, not repression, but a mega depression, you know. So I think this is what they're trying to do at the moment. So UK is a great example. Three banks, it's gone a little bit and had to be helped, but this is only temporarily until they're ready to pull the plug. So we need to watch this very clearly. There's going to be other signs, and I think we should also start to look in the US for that. We're going to start to see also some troubles very this winter coming, you know, into play. So to watch very closely for sure.
Yeah, because they're all linked, aren't they? All of these financial institutions have been in Europe and
Wall Street. Yeah, exactly.
Wall Street. Where do you think the crisis would begin? Because if it begins in Wall Street, then it's going to immediately have some effect with the European banking partners in this. And so Brussels is going to get hit, and each of the European member states, who knows, Greece, for instance, Greece hasn't fully resolved all of its economic problems, nor has Spain. They've just all bought time, haven't they, from restructuring and maybe adding a bit more debt into the balance sheet, buying bonds. All of these games have been played. They haven't fixed the underlying structural problems with the European economic setup. And Brussels, unfortunately, is at the heart of that. The number one economy in Europe is now basically in the toilet. It's Germany. Like they're looking at, you know, BASF, the biggest chemical industrial chemical consortium in the world is threatening to close their factories because they can't afford the power bill, Freddie.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Germany is facing many, many problems. Obviously, we're all going to be watching the DAX and see how it's doing. But obviously, we're going to see start of weakening, you know, sorry, signs of weakness in the DAX. And then obviously the big players, the big lobby groups, you know, Germany, especially the chemical sector will be by watching them, you will know how soon and how fast the whole system is collapsing. But clearly, you know, company like BASF, you know, they produce 48,000 chemicals, you know, to cross sections of the industry, you know, automotive industries, but also, you know, any of many, many different industries need these chemicals, you know, for manufacturing. So if you don't have any gas and if you don't have any chemicals, you're out of business. And that's what BASF is saying. So we could really see already, because we see the foundries, we go to smelters, we can see all this already metal business is running 50% lower than usual. So what's next? You know, what's next? Because you can only close that many before the economy and the economic impact is felt, you know, across the countries and, of course, across Europe. Don't forget that if Germany fails, the entire European small and medium-sized enterprises will, you know, will not be able to survive without Germany being strong, you know. So they are the lung of the European economy. So if they go first, it's just going to be a domino effect, that's for sure. So that's what I'm looking at. And France, probably what at the moment really is of concern is the Macron's carry on indexing the French debts, you know, onto the inflation. And that's a very dangerous game to play, you know, because the inflation keeps on going on rising, then obviously our debt is going to keep on rising, and the payout already, I think this year is around 20 billions. We have extra money we have to pay just because of the inflations on the money we've borrowed, you know. So it's just nothing they're doing is making sense. The only way we can explain what we are saying across the board is that it's a controlled demolition, because anybody with, you know, two neurons that works perfectly will never make decisions like that. So it's done on purpose, and they're taking us down. Yeah.
Now, indexing debt to inflation in terms of repayments, the Macron being a banker, of course, that's why he was probably put into power. But the banks benefit from that, don't they? They get more money, don't they?
Exactly. I mean, if you borrow money, and you, especially when the interest were very, you know, they're very low, you know, so there was no problem for us to borrow at a very a low interest rate. Now, for us now to say, oh, no, we're just going to carry on and index our debt on the inflation, clearly it's a sabotage, you know. And it's been denounced at the parliaments when many economists in France have said it. And it's not even a secret, you know, it's just everybody knows it, but the media just don't approach the subject. A proper media will talk about that and denounce how outrageous these decisions are. So we're gonna have to pay the price for these poor decisions. And as I said, if the inflation skyrockets even way further than what we are now, we won't be able to pay these bills, and we'll become like Greece, you know.
Default.
So, yeah. Who will default? Exactly. That's where we're going, you know.
So, and what happens when you default? You what? Go to the IMF or the World Bank for some cash? Is that what happens?
Well, it's just going to be too late for that, because you're going to have people on the street, you know, chasing you out of your castle. You know, that's what's going to happen.
Where are they going to run to, Freddie? This is the question. Where can they run to? There's not many places that you can run, unless it's they've got private islands.
I don't know. Maybe Putin will be in good mood and offer them a Russian passport, you know,
asylum.
So they can go and talk to Snowden and Gerard Depardieu, you know,
and Steven Seagal.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a tax paradise, probably. So look, it's not looking good. That's all I can say. But there is still hope as well, because I'm very happy with the so many people around the world have reacted and are still pushing back. I'm amazed how much pushback we've been able to see from and it comes from all walk of life, you know, and it's not always partisan led, you know. So it's really nice to see that people are really not taking disinformations we've been offered by the mass media on face value, but are starting to now do what any citizen should do, which is to check the information that is provided and try to see and apply common sense, you know. So it's coming, and I hope it's going to be a trend for the years to come until we get rid of this cabal, because they've been operating now for way too long, and they're trying to survive and be the next leaders of the 21st and 22nd century. You know, they're just trying to secure their place in for the future. And the only thing is, we don't want them there. We want a future. We have an idea of what the future should look like, and it doesn't basically take them into account. So. Thank you very much, Brian, Patrick.
Wise words from Freddie Ponton. Wise words. Thank you, Freddie. Thank you, Peter Ford. Thank you, Basil Valentine. Thank you, audience, for tuning in. I'm going to hand it over to Brian McLean, a.k.a. Hesher. Stay here on TNT. Today's News Talk. We'll see you next week.